I'm looking at a passage that I've read it just like you dozens of times, but I don't know why even prior to Easter it was on my heart, and I just kept coming back to it. I can't really say I'm fully aware of where I'm going this morning, but I'm living by faith. You pray that the Lord will bless the message. In Acts chapter 12, beginning with verse 1, and really you need to read the entire chapter. I'm going to stop reading about verse 5, but I'd advise you to read the entire chapter as quick as you possibly can. It's a great chapter of deliverance in the life of one of the apostles. I believe the Lord delivers people. I do. He was falsely accused, and here he is facing certain death. We'll read a little bit about it. Chapter 12 of the book of Acts and verse 1. Now about that time, Herod the king stretched forth his hands to vex certain of the church, and he killed James, the brother of John, with the sword. And because he saw it pleased the Jews, he proceeded further to take Peter also. Then were the days of unleavened bread. And when he had apprehended him, he put him in prison and delivered him to four quaternions of soldiers to keep him, intending after Easter to bring him forth to the people. Peter, therefore, was kept in prison, but prayer was made without ceasing of the church unto God for him. And we know that the Lord heard their prayers, and the process of Peter's deliverance is in the final few verses of this chapter. But I call your attention to verse 4, that last portion of the Scripture, intending after Easter. Intending after Easter. Last Sunday was what? Easter. Here we are after Easter. I guess really it would be a question this morning. What are your intentions after Easter? What do you intend to do now that Easter is over? I know that there's several things that I could mention, but I'm going to go through a few things real quick for you. I think that you just need to see this. The resurrection created some real problems for religion. And because of that, they had great hatred in their heart for the church that was being founded. And they thought that if they would kill certain leaders and stop certain individuals, that the church would stop growing and people would stop coming to the Lord, and that they could go back to business as usual. And they found someone that would help them in their venture. It was Herod. King Herod was willing to do this because we know that he had great fame from where his grandfather had ruled. And he himself at one point wanted the people to believe that he was a god himself. He did a lot of things, held feasts, and tried to persuade them. In fact, he got to believing in his own mind. He really became a figment of his own imagination and was the greatest hero in his own mind until one day the man that thought he was God met God. He had this great feast, you know, and when the feast, they all gathered in, and they said history gives the account more than the Bible that he had on a silver garment, and when he stepped out, the sun was reflecting off of that garment until there was such a countenance that, and when he would speak with a thunderous voice until the people stood and said, "This be not a man, it be a God." But then we know what happened to Herod, don't we? God struck him down. By the way, don't think too highly of yourself. This whole lesson is the fact that the church wasn't built on men. They killed James, but thank God the church is still here. In fact, most of the early apostles of the church were executed, martyred for the cause of Christ. And they've tried to stop the cause of Christ over the years, but still the church goes on. I've known a lot of great preachers in my life. I have a library that consists of literally hundreds and if not thousands of books. And I enjoy the classic writers preachers of yesteryear, and I read a lot of their books. Great, great preachers, great knowledge, great revelation. But you know, many of them have been gone for years now, but the church still stands. And God one day will call us home, but the church will go on. Because it's who the church is built on. They tried to kill the church's founder, but they could not stop him. But after the resurrection, after Jesus had come forth from the grave and the church was being established, there was great contempt for the church. And I call your attention to the contempt. Do you know that people hate the church? They hate the church and they hate anyone that really loves the church. And they'll do everything they can to come against the church. It's always funny, you know, when you're hit with anything in life, and I'm like anyone else, we've gone through our period and still in our period of mourning. It's not that I doubt where my mother's at. I know where mom's at. I know where dad's at. I know all of that. But have you ever noticed that the devil rouses up mean people when you're going through things? I've got more nasty emails and phone calls in the past week than probably in my entire ministry. One individual, they never ended something, bunch of cowards, they never signed their name. Never signed their name. I tell you, I'm really praying about whether to pay the $39.95 for reverse email just to find out who they are. If you got something to say to me, look me in the eye and say, I'll tell you what I think. I don't have to go hide behind a door somewhere, give a false email address or punch *69 or 67, whatever it is, before I call you so I won't know who you are. You know, if I'm going to tell you something, I'm going to sign the name to it. I'm not going to send you a letter through the mail and tell you a bunch of things about how wrong your church is. By the way, they don't like you either. They don't like anything. They don't like the Jubilee. They don't like people being saved. I'm trying to preach. You just might as well get used to it. If you go to a church that really lifts Jesus up, people aren't going to like you. I got one email this week, and whoever it was said, you're fat. You're ugly too. And I don't know who they were, but I could reply. I clicked on the email button and I said, tell me something I don't know. But you know, there's contempt for the church. People are running and gunning for the church. You need to see that. And the amazing thing about it was when Herod started killing people in the church, the Jews were pleased by it. Do you know how many people are pleased when churches fold and go under? Do you know how many people are pleased when preachers fall into sin and when people that have been lifted up and God has used in a great way, when they go astray, do you know how much that pleases the devil's crowd? So comes a great commendation. He felt good about it. He said, this is the way to get attention. I'll just keep killing them. I'll just keep coming against them. If you think that the devil's going to quit because Easter came, you're wrong. It wasn't any time at all after that Jesus had risen from the grave until he put it in their heart to make up a story that the disciples had come and stolen away his body by night, and they still stand on that and try to use that story today. But what they have all them soldiers there for? I think I'd have done some firing of soldiers. They had placed them there to keep that from happening. But the truth of the matter is, they're not going to stop. The devil's never stopped. He's not going to stop now. If this church continues to grow, he'll not stop. If churches fold their doors and close up, he'll not stop. He'll just keep coming against the message of Jesus Christ. So he made his plans. They like this. So after Easter, I'll take Peter and I'll kill him. He wanted to do it before Easter. But you see, you not only see the contempt, and the commendation for his wrong. And by the way, I got to add this. I'm sick of people praising wrong. The more evil that something is, the more it's praised in our society. Wrong is wrong whether you believe it or not. Wrong is wrong whether everybody in the world's doing it or not. If it's wrong, it's wrong. If it's sin, it's sin. You can't change it. You can't rewrite the book. You can't change God's mind on it. If it's sin, it's sin. But then he had to deal with the calendar. See, he was doing it to please the Jews. And Easter here, Easter really, it wasn't referring to the pagan festival that occurred at that same time. That was the pagan festival that Herod was involved with, that the Romans were involved with. But it was also the same time that Passover was held, which the Jews were involved with Passover. And he couldn't take a life at Passover. In fact, they knew that as they neared Passover, that's exactly why they came through and broke the legs of the other thieves that were on the cross beside of Jesus, because they knew Passover was coming. And here he is at the time of Passover, and he knew that that would create a great problem for him. So he said, you know what I'll do? I'll just postpone it. I won't change my intentions. I'll just let Easter pass, and then I'll be the same person. I do feel preaching coming on now. I'll be the same person on the other side of Easter, and I'll go right back to doing the same thing. I'll go ahead and put on all of the ritualistic deeds, and I'll go through all the motions of Easter. I'll be their friend through Easter, but on the other side of Easter, I'll go back to my old self, and I'll keep doing exactly what I was doing, and Easter won't change a thing. I'll just keep going the way that I'm going. My intentions are, is yes, I'll be there on Easter, but after Easter, we'll go back to business as usual. Wonder how many folks this morning that after Easter, this morning, today for them is just like it was the Sunday before Easter. They slept in. You know, they made it a point to get up early last Sunday. But now we're after Easter. I do need some help this morning, because you aren't going to help me. Some of you are staring at me. See, that's the way it is. We think that one date on a calendar changes everything. But really, our intentions, we've already set our mind that after Easter, we're going to go back to the same old routine and do the same thing. But here's the problem. What he didn't contemplate was Easter changed everything. There was a change. It didn't change his intentions, but it changed everything else. Because during that time of Easter, while the church was thinking on the Passover, they were also thinking about somebody else, another lamb that died for them. Another lamb that shed his blood for them. They thought about Jesus, and the same one that they had wrapped in linens and placed in a tomb. They knew that he wasn't there. You know, that's an amazing account to me. I was reading that again this week. You know, when the women went to the tomb to anoint the body of Jesus, they were the first to come back and tell the disciples. I'm sure you've seen it in Scripture many times. It gives a list of some of the women that were there in Luke's writing. And among the women that was there was Mary, and Mary Magdalene, but also Joanna. That Joanna's an interesting character in the Bible. You see, the only other time really she's mentioned is in Luke chapter 8 and verse 3. And you know who Joanna was? She was the wife of the steward of Herod. Now, here they were going to the tomb that was guarded by soldiers that had a seal on it. And Mary, we know at one point they were even talking among themselves, who's going to roll the stone away? They must have been confident they had a way to break the seal. Brian preached about the seal in our sunrise service last Sunday morning. But they knew there would be a way to get the seal broken. Now think about this. They placed these soldiers there to guard the tomb, knowing that they couldn't take the body away as long as it was sealed and soldiers were there. But that created a real problem. Do you think for 1 minute if Mary came to the tomb with Mary Magdalene, here's these women that have been followers of Christ, if they came and told the soldiers, break the seal, do you think they would have done that? Absolutely not. Mary knew there was no way that they would ever break that seal for them. You had to have some ties to the top person in the area to break the seal. You're not listening, are you? So Mary had a plan. She gets Joanna, who is the wife of the steward of Herod. The steward took care of everything that a person had. That's why we call stewardship. A lot of people think stewardship is tithing. It's more than tithing. It's your time. It's your talent. It's taking care of everything that God gives you. Your family. That's trying to take care of your health. Take care of everything God blesses you with. That's true stewardship. It's not just tithing. It's much more than that. And the steward was responsible for everything that King Herod had. He was responsible for all of the things that belonged to Herod. It was entrusted to him. So here she comes, knowing good and well that this steward is a representative of the people that were in authority there. Mary knew they wouldn't listen to her. But if they brought Joanna, the wife of the steward of Herod, then she had legal authority. Why? Because everybody knows any good man's going to do what his woman says to do. And when Joanna came, she said, don't worry about that. We'll get the seal broken. The problem is who will roll the stone away. Thank God when they got there, Easter changed everything. They didn't need Joanna. And they didn't need the steward of Herod. And they didn't need anyone else. Because when they got there, the stone was already rolled away. And they said, why seek you the living among the dead? It all changed. Early this morning, Jesus rose from the grave. And that changed everything. See, the point is, you can't let Easter pass you by without there being a change. And that's what it's all about, is the change. It's a terrible thing that we live in a generation that no longer preaches a personal relationship with Jesus Christ, that your life has changed. The church is now becoming more and more like Genesis 41. I've been preaching on Joseph, and I preached about that dream that he interpreted. You remember where the seven kine, which are cattle, those that were ill-favored, those that were lean, they were there. And then there were the seven fat kine, and the seven ill-favored, the seven lean, ate the seven that were fat. But the amazing thing about it was they remained the same. They never grew. They gobbled up the others, but yet they didn't grow any. We hear more and more about the church, but I'm here to tell you the church is not growing today. Because we're not preaching a personal relationship with Jesus Christ that changes lives. We've become an entertainment-seeking generation. That what we want, we don't want changed, we want entertained. We want to be able to do it all in 45 minutes and get our dose of blessing that will last us for 3 months or 6 months or 3 weeks or 6 weeks. And as long as we feel a little goosebump and feel a tickle behind our ear, then surely our heart must be right with God. But what you need this morning is a genuine change in your heart. The whole meaning of Easter is this. He has not only risen, but He has risen to change our life. Now, I don't know how it is with you, but when I met the Lord, I changed. I became a changed person. I didn't do the things I used to do. I didn't say the things I used to say. I didn't have the desires I used to desire. And the things that I couldn't change immediately, over time, God helps me day by day to make sure there's a change in my life. It all changed. Suddenly I love going to church. Hey, that's got to change. If you say you're saved, that's got to change. You can't say you love the Lord and not love His people. You can't say you love the Lord and not love His house. There has to be a change. Suddenly I loved His Word. I love to hear preaching. I used to think, how long will it be? And my favorite preachers were short preachers. Not short in height, short in time. I couldn't stand the others. I wanted it done quick so I could get in and get out and feel good about myself. But all of that changed when I met the Lord. I read an interesting passage this week. It's out of Ezekiel. And he's talking about the prophets. And he said to the prophet, he said, they come unto thee as the people, in Ezekiel 33:31. They come unto thee as the people cometh, and they set before thee as my people, and they hear thy words. That's the words of the prophet. But they will not do them. For with their mouth they show much love, but their heart goeth after their covetousness. And lo, thou art unto them as a very lovely song of one that hath a pleasant voice and can play well on an instrument. For they hear thy words, but they do them not. And when this cometh to pass, and lo, it will come, then shall they know that a prophet hath been among them. You know what we want today? We want Jesus without a change. I happened to have the TV on yesterday and they had Hip Hop Sunday on. You know, you've seen it, haven't you? Biggest bunch of nonsense ever was. It was all hip hop. Feel good about yourself. You don't have to change. Go ahead and do your drugs. Go ahead and smoke your dope. Go ahead and drink your booze. Go ahead and say your profanity. But when you come to church, just put it on and all of a sudden act like you're in love with God. That's not what God's looking for. God's looking for somebody that says, I am sick and tired of the way I'm living. I'm sick and tired of the sin that has hold on my life. I don't want to live that way any longer. I want to be a Christian. I want to be the kind of person that when they look at me, they see Jesus in me. A change. It has to be a change. You say, well, I'm a good person. You'll be a better person after you meet Jesus. Are you perfect immediately? No. But there needs to be a change. This entertainment mode we're in is going to destroy the church. But you know why? Because people would rather hear the song than the word. I love good singing. But you know, we're living in a time where everybody wants to come together and feel good about everything they're doing. I heard a preacher say on a national television program, an interview by the media, said what he thought turned his ministry around. He said, it was the day that I quit preaching on sin. Because people want to leave feeling good about themselves. Hey, listen, I hope if you're a sinner today that you don't feel good about yourself at all. Because you're lost and dying and on your way to hell. And the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords died on an old rugged cross that you could be saved. And your life could be changed. And you're leaving without God. And you're not serving the Lord. And there's been no change in your life. I pray you feel so low your feet wouldn't touch the floor if you sat on a newspaper. And I ask God to come down to a place where you can't eat. And you can't sleep because you get sick of your sin. And you say, Lord, something's got to change. I don't want Easter to come and go and there not be a change. I don't want to go back to business as usual. I don't want to have a Sunday where everybody just turns out for one big Sunday. And then hit and miss. Like a fouled out spark plug the rest of the year. There's got to be a change. By the way, it's time for the world to quit telling the church to change, and it's time for us to tell the world, you need to change. You need to change. You're not in control. We serve the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. And this nation needs a change. This world needs a change. Our community needs a change. We need a change. Let's make some influence in lives. You know, I want to ask this. I'm going to make people mad. And I really don't intend to. I really don't. One of the kids in the church came to me. And they said, "Preacher, I'm heartbroken. I'm playing ball this spring, and our coach has scheduled 8 games on a Wednesday night." I've heard it now from 2 people. 8 games on Wednesday night. Where'd all that shouting go? Huh? 8 games on Wednesday night. I asked them, I said, "Did your mom and dad go ask them to change it? I mean, why don't you go ask them to change? Instead of you missing church and run away on Sunday and Wednesday, why don't you go ask them to change it?" Could it be that maybe your kid isn't as wonderful as you think they are? You look me in my God-given eyeballs. If that kid can play, they'll change. Boy, I am preaching now. What harm would it do to go and say, "Listen, we're God-fearing people. We have church on Sunday and we have church on Wednesday. Can't we play ball Monday and Tuesday, Thursday and Friday and Saturday? What's wrong with that? Can't we have practice instead on Wednesday and be out in time to go to church?" Come on, shout it out now. Let's change the world. We are the salt. We are there to make change. You say, "Well, preacher, it wouldn't do any good." Have you asked? Have you asked? I'm not talking about going in mean and being nasty. I mean, I'm talking about sitting down across from the table in love and telling this person, "This is not good for my son. This is not good for my daughter. This is not good for my family." Boy, I'm feeling God now. If I have to do it alone, we'll do it alone this morning. There needs to be a change. And we are here to bring that change to pass. I don't understand why it troubles the kids and doesn't trouble the parents. I'm not talking about sending hate mail. I don't have to send hate mail anywhere. I think I have an obligation to let people know in love what is the truth and how I feel. And then I have an obligation to go one further than that. After I tell them how I feel, then I'm going to bombard heaven. Because their intentions after Easter is not to change. Their intention after you tell them about your faith, they're going to say, "I'm not going to change. I am not going to change. I'm going to do it regardless." But see, what they didn't know is the church started praying. And they made up their mind, "Herod, how are you going to kill Peter if you can't find him?" Well, he's in the inner prison. He'd have to go through all the wards and all the guards and everyone that's there. But when the change comes, God says, "I don't care who has you in bondage. When we touch heaven, God has a way of making a change even in the lives of people when they don't think they can change. God can make the difference." So God just sit down automatic door openers. Old Peter started through the first ward to enter, stepped out and the gates opened. "Hey, Tom, did the iron gates just open for you guys when you went in this morning?" Somebody had to have a key to do that. Can you imagine what a miracle this is? A change. See, where we're at today is most people really don't want to change. They just want a thrill. They just want a little feel-good experience. They don't want to change. No, that would bother what I believe, and that would bother my actions, and
That would bother my intentions. I don't want to change. See, most people with ministries and preachers, they're about like they are. The church, they look at the church like they do NASCAR. They got their favorite driver. Brother Howard and I was talking before service. He said, you know, I guess it's okay to say this. I won't name names, Howard. He said, you know, it's funny how people get in one little circle and they just stay inside that one little circle and keep going around. Keep going around. And they're scared to death to bring in another preacher somewhere outside that circle. And I said, Howard, we've talked about it probably 100 times in the years that you and I have been friends. If this church is so weak that even if we brought in somebody that just messed up, I mean, it was pitiful what they preached. I'd hate to think that you're so weak that you couldn't tolerate one sermon. But you know, we've got a lot of NASCAR Christians here. Some of you, the only time you come to revival is when we have your pick. See, I'm not the kind of pastor. You better get used to this if you're here. I'm not the kind of pastor to tell you who's going to preach when and where and what we're doing when or where. Because sometimes I don't know what we're doing when or where. Preacher called me 4 or 5 years ago and said, you know what, we've got all these young preachers. I think what I'm going to do is just give them a slate, a certain service out of the month for them to preach. And I said, don't do that. Don't do that. Why? Because the church will become like the early church. Some said that I'm of Apollos, and others said I'm of Cephas. And God never intended us to be of Apollos or of Cephas. God never intended you to pick your preacher and run with your preacher. God never intended for you to just pick one church and run with your church. Hey, someone said, do you encourage your people to go out and visit other churches and revivals? And oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, why? Why aren't you afraid? See, most preachers, they're afraid that if the sheep get on the other side of the fence, they'll get so fat and not come back in. But I feel like that if we really have God here and you're worshiping God and you love the Lord more than you love Calvin Ray Evans, more than you love the deacons and more than you love the church building and more than you love everything else, if you love the Lord more than all that, you'll be back. You'll be back. We need a change. That's what I'm saying. We need a change in our lives, a change in our services. We need to know that that change, the change that takes place is what really affects us. That lame man sitting at the gate in Acts chapter 3, the Bible says when Peter and John went up to the temple to pray, he was there crying out for alms, begging for alms. You know what that word means? He was doing what a beggar does here. He was saying, change! Change! He was a man that couldn't even get inside the temple because of his condition. But outside the gate, he was crying out, change! Change! Peter passed by. John passed by and said, hey, you're looking for change. I don't have any. Silver and gold have I none. But such as I have in the name of Jesus of Nazareth, you don't need alms. You need new legs. I command you to arise and walk. Thank God for the change. And he came up leaping, going into the temple of God. Oh, we need a change in our churches today. As never before, God wants to make a change. You know what I found, though? The church is so reluctant to trust people when there's a change. Drove Paul in the Arabian desert for 3 years to confer with no man except the Spirit. Do you know why? The church couldn't accept his change. Hey, I know Jeff's had a struggle with this. Jeff Miller. Stand up, Jeff, would you? Jeff's had a struggle with this. I'm going to spill your guts. Keep up. Yeah. You know, old Jeff, he started and he didn't get involved in doing a lot of things wrong. Didn't get involved in gross sin and going out there and beating his wife or abusing his kids. He got a little discouraged and he quit. He come back and said, I'm going to try to do better, preacher. And He'll tell you, I just wrapped my arms around him and I said, that's fine, buddy. Let's get with it. Let's go. He did that two or three times. And then this last time that he come forward, there was a change, Jeff. I'm not talking about salvation. I'm talking about a change in intentions. His intentions changed. And all of a sudden, I didn't have to tell him what to do and didn't have to tell him to go. He just went. And some of you still sitting back saying, well, I wonder when he's going to quit. I'm sure there's probably two or three in there. Jeff, don't quit just so I can rub it in their face. Bless your heart.
No going back.
No going back. That's exactly right. And that's why I don't even think that way. He doesn't see where he's coming. There's a change. Homer Bloomfield, stand up, buddy. I should have quit already, but I can't now. Homer played church for years. Am I right or wrong, Homer? You played church for years. He'd come on Sunday, and then everything else, hunting, the bass boat, everything else took priority over God. But Homer, I remember the day that you stood right down there at the end of the altar. You told me, then you walked back up and told Howard, and you told the leaders, and you said, I'm sorry, I'm not going to play around with God anymore. I have changed my intentions, and I'm going to be a different man. Can any of you tell a difference in Homer over these years? I mean, can you tell how faithful he is? What a change. It's because he knew he was forgiven of his sin, but he changed his intentions. You like it this way better, Homer? Kathy, I saw a change in you. I saw a change in you. I saw Kathy come from a place where she was in church and she loved the Lord and was saved and on her way to heaven. But all of a sudden, something changed. It was your intentions that changed. The next thing I knew, I heard somebody behind me go, "Whoa!" I said, "Who is that?" I turned around and looked, and why, bless God, there's Kathy. She's changed. Changed. Sometimes changes come. Oh my. See, there's some of you today that you're saved, but it is your intentions that you've got to deal with. What is your intention after Easter? Oh, I want to see Jesus. I want to do my best for God. I want to love the Lord and serve the Lord to the best of my ability. And if I fail you in the process, I'm sorry, but my intention is to live for God and do the best I can. Just try to touch as many lives as I can. And then one day when God calls, I'll get to hear the words, "Well done, my good and faithful servant. You've been faithful over a few things. Now I'm going to make you ruler over many." My intention is to not only make it to heaven, but to go in standing tall, standing proud, because I've done my best for God. What's your intention after Easter? Is your intention to see your family saved? Is your intention to be closer to God? I'm just trying to cry out today in the house of God. Change. Change. Go from a place where serving God is a labor to you to a place where it's a joy to you. Change. Change. Can any of you tell a change in Tom and Mindy Martin? Can you tell a change? It's something you make your mind up and say, you know what? Easter changed everything. I think I'm about to have a fit this morning. There's changes happening to Rubyville Church right now. Changes that, and I know that's a bad word. When I did a lot of business dealing, one of the first things they taught you when my first degree was in business, and the first thing they taught me was never use the word change. Everything's improvement. People accept improvements. They hate change. But things are changing around here. See, you think that you can stop it, but you can't. I'm not talking about a building. Things are changing. Hey, folks, you got to be realistic here. We're after Easter and our overflow room's full and our chairs are out and people's in the choir. Pretty weather's coming, and I'm telling you, if I have to, I'll take you outside and preach to you. But we'll get the message to you some way. People are hungry. They're wanting a change. They're not hungry because they're picking this church. They're not hungry because they're picking me. They're not hungry because they're picking Brian or these other great preachers we have in our church. They're hungry because they want a change. They are tired of going to church and it being business as usual. They want a change. A genuine experience. That they know that God has helped them and strengthened them to get them through their week. God grants a change.